You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Throw your HR hat away and let We Do HR Support do the heavy lifting. Find out how we can help at wedo-hr.com.
Good morning. Happy Sunday. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, we share the stories and the expertise, knowledge of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. On today's show, we are going to be joined by local entrepreneur Michelle Nadeel, who runs various businesses across Oxfordshire. And we're going to be discussing all things property, women in business. I'm sure we'll talk about the apprentice and various awards along the way, and just really give you a genuine insight into Michelle's background and expertise. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming Michelle after this. Get Radio. Welcome back. This is Get Radio and this is Business Brunch. And today I'm really, really excited to be joined by Michelle Nadeel, who is a local entrepreneur and runs seven businesses here in Oxfordshire. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Ben. Thanks ever so much for having me on.
Oh, thanks so much for joining me. So for those who don't know you, incite us. Tell me all about you, your background and indeed your businesses.
Okay. So how long have we got, Ben?
We got a while.
I've got seven businesses in total. So six in property and finance. So they range from like mortgage brokerages to estate agency, letting agency, those types of businesses. And then the seventh business is my sort of women in business. You know, I do a lot of charity events. I'm a Princess Trust ambassador for women, supporting women, mentor women in business. Yeah, so quite the entrepreneur. I've worked for myself, ran businesses for well over 20 years in the Bicester, Oxfordshire area. Got two little children. So Zach, who's 10, and Izzy, who's 5. She already thinks she runs her own business. So we'll see how we go on with her. Just love absolutely everything about entrepreneurship and always trying to push the boundaries and, you know, trying to aim for what I would class as more successful.
No, amazing, amazing. I'm so upset we've only got an hour because there's loads of things I'd love to share with the listeners, but I'm sure we will. But before we go into delving into your businesses, one of the most difficult questions I ask my guests is to pick a song choice for, because it's a radio show. So what is your song choice and why have you picked it?
I absolutely love Ed Sheeran. I was lucky enough to go see him in concert last year. So can we play Ed Sheeran Shivers, please, Ben?
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that great song choice, Everybody Loves a Bit of Ed Sheeran, by Michelle, and we've heard the intro and there's lots to unpack. So I'm just going to start with the world of property, if that's okay, Michelle. So a big question, I apologise, but what is happening in property in Oxfordshire right now? How is property in Oxfordshire?
Yeah, it's a interesting market. So I think the election hasn't done us any favours at the moment. So I think everybody, definitely the market is quieting down a little bit. But I think we're really lucky in the OX postcode. So in this sort of area, we haven't experienced a huge drop in property prices. You know, my mortgage business, we're always so busy because that's been going 20 plus years. So we've got at least 20,000 clients on that side of the business. But the estate agency, we're definitely taking on a lot more property than we have done for sale. So that's really promising. They are taking longer to sell. So, you know, typically between 6 to 8 weeks rather than, you know, flying off the shelves. So it's just, you know, being mindful of that if you are thinking about selling. And then obviously with the lettings market, you know, we are short of stock. So the lettings market, you know, there's plenty of people wanting to let in the Oxfordshire area for obvious reasons. You know, we've got so much to offer in the OX postcode. But It is really difficult because, of course, what were the tax implications? And also, interest rates rising on mortgages, landlords have started to offload all their properties, so for sale. So there is a lack of rental stock in the OX postcode. But I'm starting to see now more and more. So one of my businesses is I build property portfolios for clients. So,
Amazing.
and it's about obviously long-term investment games. So it's about generating long-term wealth, which I've done it personally and done it for over 20 years for clients. That has started to pick up a bit. So, clients are starting to sort of go, right, okay, bank at the moment. However, what with bank base rate looking to drop end of this year and then into next year, the money that you are getting in the bank is not going to be as good a return next year would be. So we are starting to see a lot of clients starting to reinvest into the OX postcode market, which is good.
Amazing, amazing. No, really, really keen to build more on that, actually. So I guess three parts, really. So firstly, just in terms of, without being too political, so I know that tax rules have changed on buy-to-lets, and I know that, and again, you'll be able to advise a lot better than I in terms of, I guess, kind of the returns. But in terms of, I guess, the rental market, is it very much that, over the last few years, with tax rules changing and with interest rates going up, that you are just getting a less of a return in there and cold feet? And I guess if so, would be your advice to landlords to hold their nerve, or is it a good time to potentially reevaluate your portfolio?
So, I mean, it depends on your personal circumstances because obviously, if you've made a whole load of money over the last 10 or 15 years, what with COVID and people realizing that actually, money is to be spent and enjoyed, then we're seeing those landlords sort of cash in and sell up at the moment. But if you were coming to me now and sort of freaking out about the market, I'd say, no, hold your nerve, sit tight. When I first started investing in property, which was when I was 18, myself and my husband built a buy-to-let portfolio. And in those times, though, the properties were costing us money on a monthly. So over the course of a year, we would be reinvesting like £5,000 to £7,000. So for me, it was always, it's a long-term growth game. You shouldn't really bank on the fact that you're making loads of money on a monthly basis. So we're back to those times now. If you were to buy an investment property today, you are not going to be worse off every month. So typically, every property that I've bought a client, they look after themselves. So what I mean by that is you've got to have your 25% deposit, but the rent will cover the mortgage payment plus the agency fees, plus the insurance, plus obviously your tax. So clients tend to work off of a nil, and there's a little bit, wiggle room in there for maintenance. But it is the long-term investment. It is that you are banking on that particular property going up in growth. And I have experienced that over the last 25 years in Oxfordshire. Yes, you get peaks, yes, you get troughs, but the overarching thing is, money in the bank is being eroded by inflation. So, it's not necessarily going to increase in value. That's the thing. It depreciates over time. Whereas my thought process is, yes, spread the risk, but at the same time, money invested in property, and I can say that from a personal perspective because I've been there, done it, got the t-shirt, built a multi-million pound property portfolio myself. That if you're in it for the long term, and I mean at least 10 to 15 years, I do think you'd see a significant return on your money.
Well, there is the well-known phrase, isn't there, as safe as houses, which is sometimes underestimated. And just in terms of, I think on this show, as well as in circles, we regularly hear that now it makes more sense to do it in a limited company. And I appreciate of course, it depends on the individual, and we're not giving financial advice on the radio, but a good disclaimer there. But are you seeing it being more common to buy property through a limited company as opposed to individually now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, again, I am no tax advisor, so please don't take my advice on tax. But from my experience and the work that I've done with my own accountant and a number of very wealthy clients' accountants, is the fact that if you are going to be doing this long term, so if you're going to be purchasing more than 3 to 4 properties, then it makes financial sense at the moment to do it in a limited company, which is basically, clients do think though that a limited company is a trading company. Typically lenders prefer to lend in what's called an SPV, which is a special purpose vehicle. So I think, you know, that's quite easy to set up. It doesn't have to have any trading history, but 3 to 4 properties is about the sweet spot for sort of saying, you know, it makes more financial sense to do it in a limited company. Because the reasons why is in a limited company, you are going to, they are higher rates with higher arrangement fees, typically on the mortgage. In personal names, they are cheaper. Obviously, you've got a tax bill, your accountant's bill to, you know, do the accounts for a limited company as well. So that's why sort of 3 to 4 properties really, for me, you need to start buying them in a limited company if that is the long-term plan.
No, amazing. And just before we move on from property, I'm keen almost to give your business a bit of a plug here, if that's okay, because I think that we see a lot of people that have maybe got nervous during COVID and maybe have more reserves because it was the unpredictable, and maybe have money that they took out of property or took out of business or have been storing away. What is the process of working with you or somebody like you? If they've got money, they want to invest in property. What is that process? What should they expect?
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Always love a plug. yeah, definitely. So I personally, my main job throughout the businesses is I build property portfolios for clients. So I need a minimum investment of 100,000. So that would cover your deposit, your stamp duty, and would enable us to buy a, you know, a 2 up, 2 down property in the OX postcode. And then what I do is quite bespoke. So clients will come to me. It's not actually a service that I advertise, so this is why it's good. Because my husband's always going, you never talk about this, that do this for clients. Just clients tend to sort of seek me out and know that that's what I do. But yeah, so basically I will source the property. And obviously that comes from my expertise in owning a letting agency. We devise a financial business plan so that, you know, we know, right, how many are we going to buy over the next sort of 5 to 10 years? We can obviously help the accountant with structuring the SPV. Then I source the properties, refurbish them for clients if they need to be refurbished, deal with all the legals, and then line up a tenant for exchange of contracts. And then obviously my letting agency manages the whole tenancy. So clients, when they work with me, they don't have to do a thing. So.
Amazing. And I think that is a bit of a myth in property. So without talking too much about me, I've got a very small portfolio in Abingdon. And I think that when I've said to friends, oh, why don't you invest in property? And again, I'm not not an advisor, and I know nowhere near as much as you, Michelle. But I think the fear has always been, oh, well, that's a bit hard, isn't it? It's easier leaving it at the bank at 3% interest. And actually, property doesn't have to be hard if you've got the right people around you. Do you think my assessment's fair there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, I've dedicated my whole life to property and finance. So, you know, I haven't picked a dud deal yet. So lots of my clients...
touch wood.
Lots of my clients have never even seen the properties that I've purchased for them. You know, I've obviously shown them a video and all the rest of it. But I think if you, you know, deal with an expert, because I think there's so many websites with so many conflicting pieces of information. There's training courses. I mean, there was that huge property boom, you know, where training courses galore about how to be the next Sarah Beeny and things like that. Unless you are literally going to dedicate your life to it. If you've got a job doing something else, you're not really that interested, but you do want, you know, I like to say your own Monopoly board, then you need to hire somebody who that's their passion. That's what they do day in, day out. You know, they know what they're doing. Because I think what is critical is what you would buy for yourself residentially would not make the best investment. So, you know, it's things like we're looking for different things. You know, we're looking for instance, properties don't necessarily have to have a drive when you're looking for an investment property. Do you see what I mean? Whereas that would be absolutely critical. if you were buying residentially. Now, I'm not saying it's not ideal. Of course it's ideal, but there are lots of things that if you were looking for your family home are not relevant when you're looking at this as a business. So how much money can we make over the next 10 years? You know, so yeah, I think you definitely need to hire an expert and just let them do it, you know, because you will never have the experience and the knowledge, even if you dedicated the next 10 or 15 years to it, than someone who's been doing it, you know, 25 years and has got proven, you know, record of, I mean, I've bought hundreds and hundreds of houses for clients. I've just signed a client where, you know, I'm going to be building him a property portfolio of 45 houses.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, there's definitely clients out there, but he has got no interest at all in getting involved because he runs a business. He's very busy. And he just needs to know that someone knows what they're doing. They'll structure it all. They'll deal with it all because it is time consuming. Mm. It is time consuming to find the right property. Yeah. So definitely, you know, I don't think there's any harm in having a little bit of knowledge around it. And I think you always got to look into the tax implications yourself. But no property expert is going to advise unless they are a tax advisor at the same time. But I think other than that, I think, yeah, give me a call.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. No, thank you so much for that insight. Really, really helpful. So let's go to for another song and then we'll continue the conversation after this.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is The Business Brunch, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Hopefully you're enjoying the show. I'm really, really enjoying it. I've got my notepad beside me, which is good. So we've spoken a little bit about property and I'm keen to now move on to your other business and keen to talk about women in business. So I think a big thing that I would start with is really just talking about, I guess, kind of how your own story and why did you set up that business? Because I think that it's really nice to tell the story behind it before we talk about what the business is. Is that okay?
Yeah. Why I set up the Empowering Entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it was really because my business is so male orientated, you know, the industry, I mean. Mm. So I was early 20s, qualified as a mortgage advisor. I'm pretty much the only female in the room at a lot of conferences. And actually used that to my advantage, but also was like, it'd be nice to have a few more females in the industry. And then as time went on and I worked in my businesses, it was, you know, very much, you know, I've always had male colleagues, but at the same time, a lot of women became interested in it. And then, yeah, it was just a love of, you know, I think women, so some women do lack confidence. And I think that I've always enjoyed, you know, I've never sort of suffered from that, to be honest. So I've always enjoyed when female employees have come in, you know, they've started off with me at like 16 and it's really working on their confidence and their self-esteem and, you know, pushing them forward. So I think for me, it was really important to, you know, I joined the Prince's Trust Ambassador for women supporting women. And it was just nice. It was nice for me to have the balance between very male dominated industry and actually doing something with females to encourage them to set up their own business, to push their business forward. And I've really enjoyed it. I've seen a lot of women, I've mentored a lot of women who've gone on to do, you know, really amazing things and their businesses have grown. And yeah, I think for me, it's that, I think it's that I've always never thought I was that maternal, but actually I think seeing somebody's confidence grow, because I think confidence is key to a lot of business success, is feeling that you're just confident in yourself. And then you will go out and do things, pop your head above the parapet, so to speak, and further your business. So yeah, it was always something I was really interested in, and I've loved every minute of it.
No, absolutely. And some of your events look great online. Some really good pictures. Bicester Village was a good one. I'm keen to ask quite a direct question here, because I think that one of the big pieces of feedback that I've heard from a lot of women in business is that a lot of networking events make women feel quite uncomfortable, and that's part of the big reason behind more and more women-only events. So I think my very strong view in business is you should create your business based on the lowest common denominator. And what I mean by that is that actually, if there's somebody in the room feeling uncomfortable, you need to change your business in order to make sure everybody in the room feels comfortable. With that in mind, I think what can we learn, whether we're male or not, to really, I guess, make sure that everybody does feel comfortable in the room? And what's your experience of that? I guess focus on kind of property conferences that we touched on earlier as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've never felt uncomfortable in any room, I've got to be honest, but I think that's not, I think I'm, you know, I've realized that I'm slightly a non an anomaly there. But I think when I first started my networking events, and it was purely to raise money because I have a financial commitment to the Prince's Trust, so it was to raise funds, obviously to go to Women Supporting Women. A lot of women came, and on their first time, they were super nervous, like so nervous to meet new people. You know, obviously a lot of new people, 25 new people, and I think instantly they felt at home. So I think you have to go out of your way to, you know, be warm, make people feel comfortable. And it is just a case of, I mean, I'm quite a tactile person, so you know, not everybody is, but it is just, you know, greeting somebody, giving them a hug, getting them a drink, you know, listening, you know, like, where are you from? What do you do? And then literally like that icebreaker. And I've got to say, everyone that's come through my events have sort of said, what an amazing group of women that we've built together. Because we do make everyone feel included and accepted. And it doesn't matter what walk of life you've come from or how successful you're seen to be on LinkedIn or whatever, like everybody is welcome. There's no, you've got to be earning a certain amount of money or, you know, so I think that that's really helped. But I think with other, I think all networking groups are great. And to be fair, I think the mixed ones, so I don't think male or female, I think you just get people whether, you know, that they are a bit nervous about meeting new people. And I think if you spot that in a networking group, they're the people that you want to go and embrace and, you know, make sure that they're okay.
No, absolutely. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And just focusing on you spoke about that through your business, you've worked with a lot of really successful women that have got that confidence to build a business. If somebody's listening right now and has wanted to set up a business and maybe not quite done it yet, what would be your advice, and what was your own experiences around that?
I mean, I would just say go for it. I mean, I always knew when I was tiny that I was going to run my own business. I just did not know what it was going to be. And to be honest, I didn't know. I never sort of, when I was little, I didn't go, oh, I really want to be a mortgage broker, you know, because that's how my journey started. It was just, I loved people, you know, and actually loved property. And so my thing would be, as long as you are passionate about it, like, to go for it and just understand that it's going to be really hard. It's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. It has been the hardest thing I've ever done. It has brought me so many challenges, but changed me as a person for the better, without question. So I think you have got to be, you know, be able to take the knocks, but I think everybody deserves to have a go at it. And it might not be successful first, second, third time around, but you just got to keep going. But does have to be something that you're really passionate about. Otherwise, I just don't think, if your heart's not in it, with how hard it is, as you know, running your business, you've just got to go for it.
No, absolutely. I think often that first step is often the hardest, and to say I'm doing it and to quit your job or to register on company's house is often the hardest bit. I do think that I do think that something that you touched on there is in terms of it being hard. And I think resilience is a big buzzword that as a recruiter I'm seeing a lot of at the moment, and I think that if we look back over the last 5 years, we've had COVID and we've had Brexit and we've had the energy crisis, which has impacted so many businesses. In terms of the resilience piece, do you feel that you do need to have resilience to be a business owner? And I guess what traits do you see, whether you're going right back to, I guess, the apprentice very early on, or whether you're going to run seven businesses or the people you've mentored? Like, what are the traits that you see in successful business people?
I do, but I think resilience can be grown. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've always loved people. I think that, well, it depends on what business you run. I think you do have to like people. But I think, yeah, resilience is one, but I do think that that comes with time. I do think it's just passion. I think that's the main thing. Like, as long as you've got that, you know, because it is going to be so tough. You're going to have days where you think, why do I still, 20 plus years in, I still have those days where I go, why do I do this to myself? Why am I doing this to myself? But yeah, so I do think resilience comes with time, but I do think passion is the core of everything, really, and determination. And what I think actually biggest takeaway for me would be I learn from every single drama thing that happens, you know, because I think unless you can look at yourself and go, I haven't dealt with that correctly, you know, there's been loads of times I've got things wrong, and it's about not beating yourself up about it. It's about going, you know, I've got to learn from that. You know, that wasn't great. I didn't deal with that situation very well. We're all human, but actually it's making those steps to make sure that doesn't happen again, or that you know the right things to put in the right places. So I pretty much say now, you know, 99% of the time I get it right, but it's taken me 20 plus years to do that.
No, absolutely. I think there's a lot of phrases around this in terms of if you're standing still, you're going backwards, and that's not just revenue, is it? That is very much your self-learning and your self-development. I'm going to ask you a bit of a recruitment thing, if that's okay. Trust me to get recruitment into this radio show somewhere or another. But I think that we're taught by a lot of business books and by a lot of business leaders to try and hire people better than you and get better people around you. And I think of yourself who runs seven businesses, I think it'd be a really good question to gauge your thoughts on. When you're hiring, do you try and get people better than you? And do you think that phrase is important, and is it doable?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm a massive supporter of successful people, and I always want to be around successful people. So, you know, I would love to, you know, be in a position where I think they'd want way too much money. So, but saying that, I'm actually looking, you know, next 3 or 4 years, I will be replacing myself as CEO of IMS. So, you know, they're going to command quite a salary, I'm imagining. So, yeah, so for me, it's about, yeah, getting the best that you can afford around you. Because obviously we've all got limits when it comes to, you know, particular job roles in the business. But I went through a phase of hiring people just because I liked them. And actually, that was a fundamental mistake. You know, I had a lot of young people where, you know, they took up an awful lot of your time. But, you know, I love training them and all the rest of it. And again, you go full circle. Now we're at a point where we are so far down the line with the business, we need very experienced people in. That really know what they're doing, that can run business units, that can lead. So, I mean, I'm all for it, because I think, you know, for me, I'm so competitive in business that if we brought somebody in who was like absolutely amazing, that would only benefit me. So, yeah, and I love nurturing talent. And, you know, so for me, I see it as a huge positive. And I think every business owner should want to hire you know, people better than them. So yeah. What about you then, Ben? Would you hire someone in better than you?
I genuinely, I'm not just saying this. I think in many areas, I think my team are better than me. Like, genuinely, I think in several areas they are. And I think that the ambition is always to do that. I think that most business owners, as loud as I can be at times, most business owners do have an element of imposter syndrome. But I think that it's really about of course, to run a business for a period of time, of course you are good. Of course you're good at what you do. And I think it's really about identifying where your areas of weakness are. But I also think something that goes so underrated in business is I think that, yes, it is about having a profitable business. And yes, it is about reaching your goals. But I think one of the things of doing this show that I've really seen is so many people do things that they hate in business because they feel that they need to. And I think one of the real traits that I've seen running this show is people that maybe it isn't the most commercially best thing to do, but actually, do you know what? I really don't enjoy that. Or actually, I really want to do the school run. Or actually, I really do want to do this piece. And do you know what? It will cost me money, but I'm cool with it costing me money because I'm going to enjoy life a little bit more. And I think that's probably an area that I admire the most in successful people, I think.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely spot on. There's so many people in my businesses where they're so much better than me at certain things. You know, like people management for me is definitely not my strong point. You know, I'm a proper salesperson. Mm. Don't get me wrong, love my team, treat them well, but it's not something that I would say that I excel at. So I think everyone in my team actually has got something about them that is definitely better than the way I would do it or... You know, I think you're absolutely right with entrepreneurs, you know, and doing what I've actually gone back into the business more in a sales role because actually that's what I enjoy doing, you know, rather than being, you know, yes, I'm sort of CEO as well at the same time, but actually I really enjoy the client work. Mm. So I'm very much back in the thick of it doing, because you do have the luxury when you're a business owner to go, what is it that I actually want to be doing now? You know, absolutely. Pick and choose a little bit about.
No, absolutely. That's the fun bit. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for your thoughts so far. We will continue the conversation after this.
The Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I'm honestly absolutely loving this conversation, Michelle. So thank you so much for joining me. We've spoken about so much. We've spoken about business growth. We've spoken about women in business. We've spoken about teams. We've touched on succession planning there as well. And so I think it'd be a good time to move on in terms of The Apprentice. I think The Apprentice is something that I would love to hear more about. So how did it all come about? What was your apprentice journey? And I guess, are you pleased you did it? And what have you done since?
I absolutely loved it. I mean, I've always been, are you a fan of the show? Do you watch it?
Love the show.
Yeah. So I always was, I don't watch it so much sort of nowadays, but I absolutely loved it. It was my favourite programme to watch. And a lot of people don't know this, but I actually applied for The Apprentice probably 5 years before I got in. So I applied for it about 5 years prior and got really far into the process and got Olympic tickets for the same day as my final sort of, you're in the final eight. Type of thing. So I gave it up. Yeah. I literally tried to speak to the producers and said, I've got Olympic tickets for the same day, thinking that they'll go, oh, well, we'll halt filming and everything for you, Michelle. And they were like, so? Like, literally, it's your choice. But no, if you can't make the date, then you're not in the show. So I was like, So I went and watched the Olympics with my dad because I thought, I'll never get to see that in my lifetime again.
Absolutely.
And I thought, if The Apprentice is meant to be, I'll get in again. Yeah. So then about 5 years later, I saw Lord Sugar had tweeted, literally, you've got to get your applications in before midnight or something like that. And I was like, oh, I'm ready for it again now. Yeah. So literally, I did it about 11:30 at night, sent it off, and just had that feeling that I knew I was in. It was so... Hardest thing I have ever had to do in my life. I mean, my little boy was not even two at the time. You know, you have to go through all this psychoanalysis. It's 3 to 4 months of auditions. Really, really hard. And still to this day, I've never done anything as hard as that. But absolutely loved it. So obviously was on the show. And they put me up for project manager week one, which I did not want to do. It was not my skill set. It was a car boot. And yeah, sadly got fired week one, which was unexpected, to be honest. But I loved it. I still got to do everything that it was a whole year of my life, you know. I got to do probably, I don't know, 200 plus interviews. Got to go to the after party, filmed so many TV shows off the back of it. It was just the most amazing media experience, you know. Now I understand how every reality TV show is filmed, and I love that. I mean, I'm in a service-driven business, and I'm not arty in the slightest, but I love creative people. So, you know, I was one of the contestants that spent more time with the producers and the runners, and, you know, there's like hundreds of people that it takes to make that show. And just was fascinated with how they put it all together. And, you know, you're still friends with all the contestants now. So filmed a podcast actually with one of them a couple of days ago. And yeah, still in touch. And I think it was the best thing
amazing
that happened to me. Yeah. The trolling is tough. So, you know, I think 200,000 people were tweeting about my fringe or something. But it makes good content for a keynote speak.
So, no, absolutely.
You know, so a lot of the tweets that were about me, I then use as collateral when, you know, I'm doing keynote talks and things like that. But yeah, hardest, but one of the best experiences I've ever had.
No, absolutely. And a few have heard this on Get Radio before, a much lower key, but I was once on Come Dine With Me and I had the trolls. I thought my career was over. I was, don't watch it back. I made an idiot out of myself, but never mind. I came last. So that's the most important thing. Amazing. And then I think since The Apprentice, I think you've kept like a really high profile. You've won lots of awards. I think you're always very very willing to go and talk. You're always very willing to share your, I guess, knowledge and your expertise. And I'm just quite keen to understand I guess kind of why you do that. And also, although it really feels from an outside you're doing it to really just help people, is there, I guess, the added benefit, is there a commercial gain to I guess being in this public eye?
Yeah, I mean The Apprentice earned me £1 million just off the back of, you know, people would use my business over, you know, other businesses because, so, you know, The Apprentice is like Marmite. So you either love it or you hate it and you think it's ridiculous. But I think everybody can understand that it's not the easiest show to go on, whether you love it or you hate it. Like, you've got to have something about you to go on it. So I think, so commercially for me, that's why I did it, is that I'm all about experiences. So I wanted to experience like the biggest TV show, you know, in the country. My episode got like 30 million views or something.
Wow.
Great. People were stopping me. I mean, my husband absolutely hated it because people would come up to us in restaurants and ask for selfies and things like that. That side of it, you know, I've never wanted to be famous, but for me, it was twofold. It was like, I knew if I raised my profile, there would be a commercial element that went with it. And, you know, as you know, Ben, our business is service related. So you have to stand out, you know. So for me, it was a bit of both. It was I want experiences in my life, but also I knew, I mean, overnight my fees went up. Overnight my business, you know, doubled. So I didn't need Lord Sugar in the end, did I? And then
Lord Sugar.
And then those levels of income have just continued since doing The Apprentice. So for me, it's like experience driven. So, you know, I do like I love filming TV shows. I got offered to do two TV shows this year, but I've turned them down because they're very much, you know, they want to get the family involved. And my husband is just absolutely not interested in the slightest. So, you know, I want to do more filming, you know, like Dragon on Dragon's Den would be perfect fit for me. So you never know, you know. I think at the moment my kids are still quite little, so I am spending a lot more time with them. So I do turn down more things than I get asked to do. Because I think you can get a bit carried away. I think you can go, oh yeah, I'll do everything and I'll go on Celebrity Big Brother, and, you know, I'm not interested in that. It is just, you know, let's keep it professional. let's keep it on brand. And it doesn't, you know, for me, it is, you know, it is raising the profile of my businesses at the same time, which is always a good thing.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. We are coming to, I guess, kind of the latter stint of the show. And what I'm really, really keen to do, and you've done it throughout the show, so I'm putting you on the spot here, really, is we always like to ask, I guess, for like top tips or takeaway tips. And I think that if you were to look back at your 20 years in business, what would be, I guess, kind of the biggest learnings, and what would be the top tips that you would give to, I guess, those listening at home or in their office now?
Get a therapist, without question. So I've worked with a number of therapists, psychologists, because, you know, I am quite an emotional overthinker. Mm. And I think in business, you know, that's great that you can be empathetic, all the rest of it, but it has held me back before. So I don't mind. I'm quite open. All my team know that this is what I've done. And actually, over the years, a lot of my team then have then gone and got therapy, because it's like, well, Michelle's not hiding it. So it's things like, you know, just working on yourself so that you don't, you know, I'm not very good at shutting off. Mm. And actually, I wasn't a very present person, parent, you know. So like my businesses, I've always found relatively easy to run from a commercial perspective, because that's all I've ever known. That's what I did. Mm. But then becoming a mother, and I think, you know, I don't know how many sort of what the ratio is, Ben, of your male to female listeners, but, you know, I would not condone this, but I had 2 weeks off both times I had a baby, and then I was back in the office full time. You know, that's not normal. Mm. So, you know, I worked then with therapists to become a present mum, because I thought, what I don't want is, you know, I was always there. I always bathed them. I always did the night feeds. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that I didn't do stuff with my kids, but I didn't want them to be older, you know, 18 to 20, and go, oh, mum was never there. So for me, it wasn't a natural thing to sort of go. So I think that is the biggest takeaway. If I can help anybody listening to your show, is that if that's the way you're feeling, you know, don't put business first. It's not, you know, I always have done up until sort of 4 or 5 years ago. My family come first now. Mm. Actually, I always thought my businesses would then suffer, and they haven't. They've actually grown extensively since I put my family first, and the businesses are secondary. So I was like, if you're an entrepreneur, a natural entrepreneur, and that's what comes easy to you, like it did to me, it was like working on the things that you don't come naturally. You haven't failed. Like, you know, people do need help in various areas, and that's where I wasn't my best. And now I feel like I've got a really good balance. So I do the school run every day. And we you know, I've always had a full-time nanny, and we let the nanny go so that I could spend more time with the kids. And actually, I've never been happier. So, you know, if there are people out there listening that, you know, they're potentially putting their business first, then I think you can have it all. You really can still have it all. And you just got to find that right balance and work with some decent therapists.
Amazing. No, really good advice. And no, thank you for such insight. I think that's genuinely going to help a lot of people that are listening. So no, thank you for that. I can't believe it. We are at the end of the show. But thank you so much for joining me, Michelle. It's been so, so insightful. Definitely, if you're listening at home, I'd encourage you to follow Michelle on socials. And yeah, if you get a chance to go to one of Michelle's events, I definitely recommend that. We are going to be back next week with some brand new guests, and we're going to be talking about hospitality in Oxfordshire next week. And to do that, we're joined by George Chabach of the Sandys Group, and they've also launched Paddle People recently, which is a brand new sport that's recently come to the UK, and they're doing a really, really great property development in central Oxford as well. So on theme with Michelle there. But just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show every Sunday at 11. 11 a.m. on the radio or online. There's also a podcast format, which is available via all your favorite podcast platforms and released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing across Oxfordshire, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Make sure you have a look at your notes of the show, and I will see you next week.